I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It is Grant and Danny right here on 106.7 The Fan, but no GP. The guy that never gets sick somehow is home sick. Pete Metterist is going to hang out today with us. We got plenty to talk about on the radio program. Carl Hagelin, or Carl Hagelin, will join us at 12:45. It's Hagelin. He's coming out 12:45. A couple Redskins matters to get to, Pedro. Ryan Kerrigan, John Keim had it in some of the blurbs. He does a great job on ESPN sort of covering the Redskins. And he's got one of these, hey, here's what might happen. A couple nuggets in there I want to go over. We're going to mine that source for a couple different things. Talk Ryan Kerrigan extension? Question mark. Trent Williams, Ron Rivera, the report that you just mentioned in your update about Tony Pauline saying that Trent Williams, by the way, will be back. Talk some Jordan Reed. Cap's got a big sequence. We're going to start here NFL playoffs in a second. This is happening. Get on board the trainer. Get out of the way. But first of all, how you doing this morning, buddy?
Doing splendid, my friend. Always happy to play the role of Adrian Sanchez here on the Grant Danny program.
That's right. Utility man. Pete's going back and forth across the hall. Didn't update. Came sprinting in here. Not even out of breath. It's amazing. It's happening, folks. The 17-game schedule is not right away. That's what we're hearing. The 14-team playoff is going to happen right now. This is from Mark Maskey in the Washington Post. While the season would not go to 17 games immediately, the NFL and the owners want to implement the expanded playoffs in the 2020 season, according to a person familiar with the deliberations. One of those people sounded a note of slight caution, though, saying the 14-team playoff field probably will take effect next season. In other words, we'll do 17 games eventually. I saw some reports here, Pete, about the CBA negotiations. The owners, easy to get 32 billionaires taking private jets to a spot to vote on stuff to ratify it. Players union, they got 32 reps, but then it's got to be ratified by 2/3 of the actual players once it's ratified by the reps. A lot harder to get millionaires and, you know, hundreds of them on the same page than it is for the owners. The negotiations from the owner's perspective, when they leak something out, they say it's going great. Everything's awesome. Same page. It's good. Players union, not so much. There are guys that are staunchly opposed to 17 games without some more offsets. There are a couple things that are standing here maybe in the way of this, but it sounds like expanded playoffs are happening, and they're happening as soon as next year.
Here's why. Expanded playoffs mean, A, more playoff shares for players, so there's a win for the players in this thing. If you make the playoffs, you're going to get a playoff share of some sort. And for the owners, that's at least another home game for a couple more teams now with the expansion of the playoffs, bringing in one more team. So, in other words, Danny, it means more money for the players. It means more money for the owners. And your point about the 17 games, this might be pushed back maybe as far as 22 or 23.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually it's going to happen. All they're trying to figure up is how do we divide up the pie with the players and the owners, because 17 games, at least for some teams, does mean more money by having one more home game.
So here's how it would go. Seven teams in each conference would qualify for the postseason instead of the current six. One team in each conference, rather than the current two, would receive an opening round playoff bye. That would make for six first round playoff games, three in each conference instead of the current four, one of which might be played on a Monday night.
TV. Get some TV money.
Yeah.
There you go.
I have to tell you, I don't mind that.
No, not at all.
Listen, the current playoff format is awesome. I really like it. You get the occasional upstart in the wild card round, but a lot of times you're doing Cincinnati Bengals, you know, TJ Yates for the Texans against Andy Dalton, and the game sucks, and who cares, right? But still more football, and it's still prime time, and it's still a good deal. I don't hate this. I thought I would hate it. I don't like the leagues where basically half the teams are more than half just make the playoffs just to be cannon fodder, and GMs like Ernie Grunfeld get to pat themselves on the back for being the seventh seed. That doesn't excite me in general, right? Because you look at the bottom half of the Eastern Conference in this year's NBA, for example, a team that's 15 games under 500 is going to make it. That seems dumb to me, right?
You get obliterated by the Milwaukee Bucks.
That's the equivalent really of a 6-10 team making it in the postseason, which might happen here when you start adding teams and you get a fluky season. But I don't hate that format. I don't hate it at all. I want the regular season to matter. The NFL does the best job of that. It's why, to me, it's the biggest reason why it's the king snake in all the sports is because each week is a referendum. Each week matters so much, whereas a baseball game in June just can't matter. It just can't matter the same way that appointment television on a Sunday in the fall does. I don't hate this. I don't hate the idea of having a Monday night playoff game. I don't hate the idea of spreading out that Saturday-Sunday situation because it's the only game in town. This is kind of growing on me.
I like the Monday night game, but only if the winner ends up playing the following Sunday. That has to be
right.
Mandatory coming out of this thing. And obviously, the question is, do you take the best matchup, which would be 4-5 in the first round, as opposed to a 2-7 or 3-6? How do they determine which teams are going to play in that Monday night contest? We've also seen the opportunity that they may start flexing some Monday night games from the regular season as well to try and help out the ESPN product on Monday nights.
Because it needs help, man. It does. It's,
well, I mean, look, when you draw, unfortunately, in late November and you have like 4-7 versus, you know, 3-10 or 3-8, that's not what you want on Monday night football.
I mean, NBC's sitting there twiddling their thumbs during those negotiations, and ESPN pays billions and billions of dollars for it, and they said, that's fine. Hey, when we do Sunday night football, we want to pick the matchup. The NFL's like, great. And ESPN's going, oh, crap.
Yeah, you're going to leave us with Jacksonville versus Cleveland.
Crap.
Thank you. But look, I mean, right now, I think it's an attempt for the NFL. As you mentioned, look, we get 16 games during the course of the season. That's what we love about the NFL. I don't mind the extra playoff team because we still only get, you know, limited number of regular season matchups. Give an extra team and an extra fan base a chance to at least live one more week through a potential playoff game, even if they do end up being the 7 seed. But at the same time, you know, little tweaks like this are ways for the NFL to maintain a freshness without really doing something drastic to change the way the game is played. And I think that's important. It's still, in the end, we're still just playing football. We're playing football the same way. We're just rewarding an extra franchise in each conference with a playoff berth and then, you know, maybe putting a game in prime time on a Monday. I'd much rather see a game on a Monday night, quite frankly, than a Saturday afternoon at 4 o'clock.
Yeah, I don't hate that. So let's get some calls on this, 800-636-1067. They're adding a team in each conference. This sounds like it's happening. The train has left the station. It's almost to the destination. It's at Newark, and we're like a stop away from Penn Station in New York. This is happening. For example, by way of information, this past year, the Rams at 9-7 would have been your 7th team. That's a 9-7 team. Up and down this year, they have some great wins. They beat New Orleans early in the season, had some bad losses. They were not as good as they were the year before, obviously, getting to the Super Bowl and losing it to New England, but still pretty competitive. That's not an embarrassment. Pittsburgh at 8-8 in the AFC would have made it. A little bit less solid. That's way too much Mason Rudolph or Duck Hodges or whatever, but I'll tell you what, that defense would have played. The defense would have been a team that an opponent wouldn't have been that excited to see the way T.J. Watt and company get after you.
Danny, I believe there's going to be far more teams at 9-7 or 10-6 that occupy that 7 spot than either an 8-8 or 7-9 or 6-9-1. As we've seen a drifter in the past, 7-8-1 slide into the playoffs. That's going to happen from time to time just because of the nature of the game.
Sure.
But I do believe more often than not that 7 seed is going to be 8-8 or better. And quite frankly, more often than not, sometimes that 8-8 team is a team maybe that got off to a tough start but comes on at the end of the season. And all of a sudden now, there's a reward for them to keep playing as opposed to potentially tanking for the NFL draft, so
right.
to speak.
I mean, a team like Dallas who started off great and then just kind of limped to the finish. I mean, that's a story, too. Can you win one more game to get yourself in? At first, I kind of bristled at this just because it's change. And when the motivation simply is, I would like some more money. I was kind of reflexively put my hands up and go, wait a minute, hold on, let's examine this. I got to tell you, after seeing this proposal, seeing the way it's going to go, only one team gets a bye. I think that's fine, right? The best team in the conference.
Sure.
Maybe there's a more of a drive for that. Maybe that turns out to be less competitive at the end of the year. Maybe more. We'll see. That's TBD. We need some data points for that. But adding one more team to the postseason, adding a playoff game, that's not the end of the
incentive
world.
Incentive for more of your
teams
to keep playing week after week. So as a fan, in week 15 or week 16, as opposed to my team sitting some starters and people that I really paid my money ahead of time to buy tickets to come watch, now I may see Drew Brees if in New Orleans in week 15 or week 16 as opposed to Teddy Bridgewater
so you like it?
Or somewhere along the way. Love it.
I like it too.
I love it.
800-636-1067. I thought I wouldn't, but I do. I thought I wouldn't like this, but I do. It's Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Pete is in for GP. The seventh team in each conference, 14 teams total instead of 12. We're used to 12. 12 is comfortable. It's the warm bath. They're asking you to adjust. 14 teams will make the playoffs. This sounds like it's happening. Just give us your reaction. Thumbs up or thumbs down. Your call's next, my man. A longtime Redskin might be getting an extension. That's maybe the most likely outcome. We'll discuss that at 10:30 this morning on 106.7 The Fan. Welcome back to the program. It's Grant and Danny here. Pedro in for Jeeps, who's under the weather. Right meow, discussing the following. The NFL is going to have an extra playoff team in each conference next year. That sounds like it's done and it's happening. That's basically ratified. There's still some things that have to get worked out for CBA negotiations going forward about discipline, about 17-game schedules, about Roger Goodell, punishment, revenue sharing, you know, the big stuff. This extra playoff team, Pete, sounds like everybody's on board with it for the reasons you mentioned at the top of the show. Everybody gets more money. TV viewership goes up. More teams competitive. And I think it's good for everyone. And here's where I'm going with this. Let's say you're one of the teams that's still in it. Now, I know the trade deadline in the NFL is not the same as the other sports, but bear with me. Let's say you have an 8-8 type club, but maybe you want to do something. Maybe you think you can be that seventh team, right? And maybe that's the right time for you and your program to do that. Teams that are out of it, a.k.a. the Redskins, or a team, who knows, like a Detroit this year, right, with Matt Stafford injured, and it's just not going the way you want. Now maybe you can benefit that much more. With more teams competitive, now you can be the trade partner. Now you can trade Darius Slay to a competitor, or you can trade Kenny Golladay to somebody if you want to and get a haul back because more teams are competitive, more teams are in it. I like that in general in sports. The haves and the have-nots, that's always going to be, there's always going to be teams in different parts of their cycle in terms of where they are in terms of building and how close you to a championship team, are you pushing your chips in, et cetera. Another spot allocated to a group that's going for it, I think all is good for the have-nots as well.
Look at the buildings that these teams play in late in the season. For a team that may have a Hail Mary chance to get that last playoff spot or, you know, maybe two out with three to play, fan base is kind of checked out a little bit, building's half empty. Well, now that building may not necessarily be half empty because there's still something for probably another five or six teams at least to play for in each conference by adding this additional berth. And again, that equals revenue, and I think that's the way the league is trying to say, hey, how can we keep more of our fans engaged longer? Because that's also a factor of only playing 16 games. If your team is sitting at 6-9 with two games to play and the math doesn't look your way, more often than not, somebody's either tried to sell their seats off to somebody else or they're just not going to show up. So even though the season ticket may be paid for, you're not getting parking, you're not getting concession, you're not getting all the ancillary dollars that come along with it, and thus the building is half empty. And I think this is a way for ownership to say, how can we keep our stadiums full for more of the 16-game schedule than it's been late in the year when people have checked out because their team is mathematically eliminated at that point?
800-636-1067. Do you like it? An extra team is going to the playoffs in each conference. They're going to raise the total from 12 to 14. Are you in? Rich and only, first up, man. Good morning.
Morning, guys. How you doing?
Good, buddy.
I love this on every possible level. Give me more football, please. And not only that, only the number one seed gets the bye now. It's not the two. You're rewarding right. The best in each conference for doing it. But I'm not sure on one thing, though. There's two extra teams. Is there going to be a Sunday night and a Monday night game? Or is there going to be like a dual Monday night
what
game?
What I think you would see is, because primetime football means so much, you would see a primetime game Saturday night, two on Sunday, and then one on Monday night.
You're not doing NCAA tournament style,
right?
You've got the window. I mean, this is yours. During the season, you get your regional windows, and we get the Redskins, and you know, up in Baltimore, they get the Ravens, your CBS, your Fox game, et cetera. That's out the window come postseason. So I'd imagine they would do just what you said, Saturday night, Sunday, and Monday. Now, here's the thing. Because this is confusing a little bit, but you get six first-round playoff games instead of the current four.
Well, so you could get two Saturday. You'd still get two Saturday. You'd have to have three Sunday.
So that's where...
You'd have to have three Sunday. You'd have to have like 12:30, exactly. 4 o'clock, and then 7:30 or 8 o'clock.
That's where
There's
I was going.
There's where the extra game comes in.
I think it's Saturday in your normal window with it. Because this year, what did they do? 3 and 6:30, kind of that weird in-between time that we're not used to. I think they would do something like that on Saturday. You still get two. I think you get three on Sunday. I think that's going to be the day. I think that's going to be the special
football
one.
Viewing. That would be.
That's pretty awesome. And then you get your Monday night dessert. Once you're satiated, have enough time to digest, you get Monday night.
But the question is, the fight's going to be, and this is whoever wins that, I would assume it's going to be ESPN that keeps the Monday night playoff package. The question is, which game are you going to get? Are you going to get 4 versus 5, which is probably the best game, or are you going to be saddled with 2 versus 7 or 3-6? And I know the NFL would say it doesn't matter. It's a playoff game either way. But if I'm looking for either the best team or the most competitive game, which means you'd either take a 2 seed, no matter who they're playing, because they probably got the star power, or you take the 4-5 game, which at least on paper may be more competitive.
What's the downside here? Because you and I both like it. Rich liked it, and I'm seeing on Twitter that people tend to like it. I'm at Funny Danny. Pete's at Pete Medhurst. What's the negative to this? Because initially, my reflexive reaction when I first saw this kicked around, Grant and I were talking about it, I don't know, maybe 3 weeks ago or so, was I go, I don't like it. I like 17 games. I think that's good. I want that. I like winners and losers. I don't like 8-8. I want someone to be a winner and someone to be a loser, and I don't want you to finish 500 anymore. I want under or over, and that's good. I like 17, the odd number, with the idea of having a neutral site game for everybody and some cool stuff that you could do. What's the downside here? Are we missing something?
What if the Rams is the 7 knockout, the 2 seed? You know, the Saints or whoever it might be.
Then it's fun and exciting?
So you lose Drew Brees, you know, and then you're stuck with Jared Goff the next week around the playoffs. I mean, really, that's the only downside to me is the opportunity does exist that you could lose a team with some star power due to an upset in that first round or first week. Other than that, I don't really see the problem.
First round bye becomes super important, right?
Which means it's already important. You play hard until you sew that up.
It's already important, but now one team gets it.
Exactly.
I dig that. I wonder, because
we've had a couple of 6 seeds move through all the way to the Super Bowl. Steelers actually won it as a 6 seed 1 year.
As did the Ravens, right?
It's not impossible that that team could do that. But other than that, other than knocking out a team with a little bit more star power, or star quarterback or something, I don't really know what the issue is unless somebody, say a 2 seed loses, everybody, if we had the old system, we'd have had a bye and we wouldn't have had to play this week, yada, yada.
Well, the downside, I guess, would be in those years, right, where you have the thing that I can't stand, but other people don't seem to mind it. Again, I feel like I'm a space alien sometimes. When the crappy team in a crappy division happens to be the least smelly, right, and they're 7-9, 8-8, whatever, and they get to host the wild card game against a 12-4 team. I hate that. I hate that so much.
I would hope that that's rectified by this issue.
Well, but people don't seem to mind it, and I find that baffling. It's baffling that maybe it sounds like you and me are the minority.
I can't believe anybody that roots for the 12-4 team would be supportive of that.
And so
I'm 12-4, and I'm going on the road to a team potentially that could be 8-8 or 9-7. I don't buy that. My team worked their ass off. They just happened to be in a tough division where the winner maybe was 13-3.
Yeah, I want division winners to make it. I'm fine with that. Even if division winner has a worse record,
I just want you to be seated on your record because somebody's got to win a bad division.
Yes.
The NFC East, somebody had to win the NFC East this year. Somebody's got to win it.
So I hate the idea that Philadelphia could have hosted an 11-5 team or could have hosted a 13-3 team or whatever, just given those current years.
I
hate that. I hate the way that goes, but people don't seem to mind that. But the complaint would be if you get one of those years where a couple 7-9 teams get in, because the AFC dominates the NFC, and then the back end of your
depending what the crossover roster. Games are, and
that's going to be your complaint. People are going to wait for that data point and then go, "See, we told you this was bad." But
and still, you know what? That's going to happen one year, Danny. Just by chance, it's going to happen.
It happens with 6, and now it's really going to happen with 7. But to me, that's not the end of the world. To me, do you have a bad playoff game? We got that covered.
Right.
We got that covered with 6. I don't know. Not a big deal to me. Here's what might be a big deal: a Redskin that you know might be getting a contract extension. And it's because the owner likes him. We'll explain it after the update. Grant and Danny here on on the Fan, Pedro in for GP. I remain old Randy Duye at Funny Danny on the Twitterverse, at Pete Medhurst on the same medium. 12 o'clock hour, we're going to get into Trent Williams, Ron Rivera, Dan Snyder. There's something of an update on this front here, Pedro. And it's not the same old recycled Trent Williams story that we've done a trillion times over. What do you do with Trent Williams? Give us the call. We're doing something a little different with it, I promise. It's going to be unique, and then we'll talk some more Astros. And I got a theory. I heard Sam Fortier on the Chad Dukes radio program the other day, and it got me to thinking. It got the old noggin stirring. And I got an angle that I think is actually interesting that I want to see what you have to say about it. But the topic of the moment here is something John Keim wrote on his ESPN blog. He does such a great job covering the Redskins. And this is something cool that ESPN does is they find a really good hometown guy or gal who covers the team, put him under the ESPN umbrella, and then he just kind of goes about his work and blogs and covers and updates. And so he's sort of your resident Redskins expert for ESPN. Here's what he said in his blog post the other day about some decisions the Redskins were going to be making. Talked about Jordan Reed, what might happen. We'll get into him a little bit later on. But Ryan Kerrigan, the name always comes up. It comes up not because things went great last year. He was injured a little bit, production slipped, and now all of a sudden you could talk about a cap savings of close to $12 million for a team that could frankly use some cap savings. Now, they're in an okay spot here in the moment. We'll get into that in a second. But always remember, Mike Shanahan said that cap penalty that was imposed on them right before free agency of $18 million per year, total of $36 million over 2 years, was the largest penalty in the history of the NFL. Whether you agree with that or not, know that it's significant. They've got that in effect with Alex Smith in terms of salary cap percentage. $21.4 million of the cap is going to someone that will not play for them. That's the equivalent of a penalty. It's no one's fault, but that's where they are. They could use some creative ways to get some cap space. So one of the things that's come up a lot, Pete, and I'll tag you in here in a second, is trading Ryan Kerrigan, releasing Ryan Kerrigan, restructuring Ryan Kerrigan. But here's what John Keim says. I thought this was very interesting. Kerrigan is on this list because many questions get asked about him. But the reality has always been that an extension is far more likely than anything else. Washington owner Dan Snyder remains high on him and has communicated that to Kerrigan. Multiple sources who know Snyder will have long predicted an extension. Kerrigan wants to remain in Washington, hopefully to be here when the team is good. React to that, please.
First of all, has there been a player during his tenure as an owner that Dan Snyder did not like? I mean,
yeah, like Lavernius Coles at the end.
I mean, that kind of stuff. I mean, you know, Dan, to a fault, likes all of his guys. And you want, I mean, if you're a player, you want ownership certainly to be fond of you. That means your shelf life there has a chance to be better. We've seen at times probably goes over the line in terms of the way the football team is operated. But at the same time, Ryan Kerrigan still, Danny, represents visibility, some recognition as a player. He's a recognizable player out there to part of the fan base still. And perhaps Dan, we know, has a thing for guys that want to be lifelong Redskins. And I think there's an affection here because there's one time Kerrigan could have gone, hasn't. And at this point, you know, I still think even if you draft Chase Young, you've got to have viable people behind him, whether that's Sweat and him starting or Kerrigan rotating in or Kerrigan starting and Sweat and Young rotating. However this has to happen, you need as many good bodies as you can. The question to me is how long is the extension? If we're going to extend Ryan Kerrigan, let's do it in a fiscally responsible way. Short term, even if it's cash, you know, with a lot of incentives in there, has to be an incentive-laden deal. Because if Ryan Kerrigan can't get the 10 sacks for me right now, then he's of no real worth to this team, in my opinion, at this point. Now, there are some people that will tell you he's still physically capable of doing that. And then there are some people that genuinely wonder whether Ryan Kerrigan can still get to that figure.
It's about how you view this past year, right?
Correct.
Is this a down year because of injury, or is this the new normal?
It's the first year that Ryan Kerrigan has ever suffered through something like this. So you're willing, because of his ability to show up every day and play throughout his career, you're willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. But if we're going to extend him at this point in his career, this can't be a four-year you know, welcome him and give him credit for being a lifelong Redskin type deal. This has to be short-term, incentive-laden. Give him a solid, you know, a decent amount that's going to, you know, base salary. It's going to make him show up and want to work every day. But for the rest of the big money to come, it's got to be an incentive-laden deal. So I know Ryan Kerrigan is playing hard all the time to get to a number where some of his incentives are going to kick in. This has to be a fiscally responsible deal for the Redskins, so this is not hanging over your head 2 or 3 years from now like an Alex Smith contract or Jordan Reed in case he does get hurt again somewhere along the way.
He had a season. I'm trying to remember when it was when we were doing the what's wrong with Ryan Kerrigan. He got off to a really slow start, still got his 13 sacks. I want to say it was 2018 where he had one sack through the first 5 or 6 weeks, if memory serves. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then, of course, he ended up getting to his numbers. That never happened last year. And you wonder, again, is this the new normal or is this, you know, just a fluke year where he's battling injury?
Part of this, too, though, Danny, is consistency of play on the other side. If the guy on the other side is not making anything happen, then it is incredibly mm-hmm. easy to block a guy like Kerrigan over on the other side. You just constantly put the running back or the tight end over there, have him chip as part of a double team because you know your tackle on the other side
right.
is going to handle whoever's rushing off the edge over there. And I think that's been part of what has happened to Ryan Kerrigan here as well. Ryan Kerrigan can be the strongest man on planet Earth. He can bench press 900 pounds. But if he's got 2 or 3 guys blocking him, he's not getting to the quarterback because your guy on the other side is playing so poorly that teams can just block Ryan Kerrigan and not worry about the guy on the other side.
So he's 1 sack behind Dexter Manley for the all-time team lead. Surpassed mm-hmm. Charles Mann last year. Okay, he's going to retire in all likelihood as the all-time sack leader in Washington Redskins history.
Which quarterback's going to fall down so he gets that sack?
Yeah, I'd love to have that.
Just kidding.
Because it means the blowout in favor of the Redskins, hopefully. Actually, that was a blowout in favor of the Packers that year, so maybe not. Point is, Kerrigan's going to finish Ring of Fame player.
Sure, absolutely.
I think the credentials speak for themselves.
No question.
You're the all-time sack leader. You're a first-round pick. You're an institution. Good career. The question then becomes, well, there are a couple questions. Number one, what's his future? What do you believe? Do you believe fluke or the new normal?
Danny, there are some teams in the NFL whose philosophy when they get to players of Kerrigan's age is to move on from them no matter what.
Oh, yeah, and they're good teams usually who do
and
that.
And that's exactly right.
There's
a sucker out there that may give you more compensation than you think here for a player like that because I'm sure there's another NFL general manager or two that still thinks Ryan Kerrigan has a lot in the tank.
So two things jump out at me. Again, the Kerrigan question is, what do you believe is the new normal? 800-636-1067. And here's the thing we haven't brought up yet. This sentence, I did a Tim Allen home improvement. Quoi? In French. I said, I yelled, what? And Tommy's even got a drop of me screaming, what? I did that by myself. Washington owner Dan Snyder remains high on him and has communicated that to Kerrigan. What are we doing here, Harry? What is that about? How is this coming out? How is this a thing? Why is Dan Snyder involved at all? Is this Ron Rivera just being like, Dan, what do you think? Here's what I think. And then hopefully Dan agrees. Why is Dan Snyder? He likes Ryan Kerrigan. I don't give a damn if Dan Snyder likes him, hates him, feels anywhere in between. Get out of here.
But you know what, though, Danny? I will say this, and not necessarily to defend Dan in this situation, but as beat reporters in this town, everybody and people that talk about this team, we have become conditioned to the fact that we just simply ask the question, what does Dan Snyder think of this player? This is a longtime popular player here. Almost every longtime popular player here has some sort of good, positive relationship with the owner. Maybe this is the owner's way of saying, hey, Ryan, we still believe in you. Maybe this is a motivational tactic to say, hey, Ryan, we still believe in you here with this franchise. We want you to be here. But at the same time, Snyder's got to be open to the fact that if the guy can't play anymore and Ron Rivera wants to move on from him, you got to let your coach move on from him so he can better the team.
I'd like Dan Snyder to receive an email. I want Dan Snyder in the loop. I don't care what he thinks about a player.
But, Danny, we've all been conditioned to say, what does Dan think? And if Dan has an opinion or if somebody tells you Dan likes the guy, we're going to print that or we're going to say that.
Again, I'm not mad at John Keim here. I'm mad that Dan Snyder's opinion on a football player is going to be weighed at all. I need Ron Rivera. I want to know what he thinks. What does Kyle Smith think? And I'll even have Jack Del Rio in my meeting because he's the defensive
Absolutely.
Coordinator with some sweat.
Absolutely.
If you want to throw a position coach in there, that's just fine. I need the football guys to do it. What we had before was Bruce Allen, that boob, as the buffer. He was the mouthpiece. He was the mouth of Sauron, if you know your Lord of the Rings, which I do, by the way. He was the mouth of Sauron, walking around doing Dan's bidding and being the deflector shield. That's gone now. And Dan trotted, told us happy Thanksgiving, trotted Ron Rivera out there in January, right? This is supposed to be the Rivera show. Doesn't sound like it is to me. Doesn't sound like it is. I need to know what Rivera thinks about Ryan Kerrigan.
I mean, in this case, I mean, maybe it's just a case of Keim talking to a source who's, you know, close to Dan or something. We haven't seen Ron Rivera talk about this publicly yet.
Right, and I mean, he shouldn't be. He shouldn't be commenting publicly on players that are still under evaluation stuff.
I would agree with that.
But you see where I'm coming from
sure.
on this, right?
Sure.
800-636-1067. Two reactions or two questions. We could spin two plates. We're adults. We could do it. Question one, what do you do with Kerrigan? Release? Try to trade? This extension where you can fix the salary cap a little bit? You can do what Pete's talking about, some incentive-laden things, lower the cap figure, keep him as a Redskin, let him set records here? Or do you get cutthroat? You move on in some way. And the second part is, Dan Snyder likes Ryan Kerrigan. That's cool. I like him too. I like Kerrigan a lot. He's a great dude. I shouldn't have any say. I'm in the Dan Snyder boat in the sense that I shouldn't have any say about what they do with football players. 800-636-1067. Grant Danny on the Fan. Caps back in action this evening. The Montreal Canadiens, very important game for them. It's very big for the Capitals. They got to get right, dude. They got to get right. I want to see Brandon Dillon. I want to see the whole. I want to see an ejection of life. Just for me. They don't need to prove anything to anybody. They're pro hockey players, for goodness sakes, Pete. But I need a little something. Just
interesting.
Old Danny
interesting
the fan
now
here.
That teams who may be, you know, trying to take runs at Capitals players, now not only do you have to worry about Tom Wilson on the ice, now you got to worry about Brendan Dillon too. So you got to have your head on a swivel, and you're hoping now maybe this distracts a little bit from the teams on the ice when those two perhaps are out there together at the same time. It opens it up a little bit for Mr. Ovechkin and company.
Our gentleman on the buttons here, Thommy, host Crashing the Net, okay? He knows a thing or 97 about the hockey. I just watched the Capitals play, right? And here's what I know. Right now, defensively, they're bad. What I want is an improvement in that area. They brought in a new defenseman whose primary job is to play some defense. I'm hoping that kickstarts an improvement. This hockey analysis brought to you by Danny Ruye. 106.7 The Fan. But the topic of the moment here, if you're just joining us, welcome back. Thank you very much, Tommy. Thank you very much. I mean, sometimes you just hit a home run, and you know it, and you kind of you pimp it a little bit. I just did that.
The only question is, were you tipped off to the pitch coming before you hit the home run?
I knew it was coming. I picked up the signs. Here's the deal.
Ding.
Ryan Kerrigan is a Ring of Fame Redskins player. Perennial Pro Bowler, very productive until this past season. You're basically booking 11-plus sacks over his career. You can set your watch by it, right? He has been very consistent. Good years, 13. Bad years, you know, 9.5. Whatever, right? He is a good player. I'm curious to see what would happen here in Jack Del Rio's scheme system where he's handed the dirt more often. That 3-4 part is overrated, but there are some times where you see him dropping into space, which is not what that dude's about. Okay? He's basically a double-digit sack guy if you turn him loose and let him rush the passer. He's up there in terms of sack production with some of the elite pass rushers in the game over the last handful of years. Now, I don't think anybody would confuse him for Von Miller in his prime, but it's not an insult to say, hey, you're not the most dominant pass rusher that can take over a Super Bowl, right? He's a good player. Last year, only 5.5 sacks, injury plagued, due almost $12 million this year in terms of a cap hit. I don't believe personally that you're going to get $11.69 million worth of production from Ryan Kerrigan next year. This is the hard, terrible world of the NFL, okay? I don't mind the idea of restructuring a deal, signing him to an extension that's more cap-friendly this year, keeping him around for a couple more seasons, let him set the record, let him be an assist in your culture building, right? And then if he wants to hang on for a year when he's 34, 35, he can go do what Greg Olsen did, sign a one-year, you know, $5 million deal with whomever, right, who wants a situational pass rusher. To me, he's still got something to give. Even if you're going to take Chase Young at number two, I still think you can use Ryan Kerrigan to be the mentor, right? To be the productive part-time player at a minimum. At maximum, I think if you turn him loose, you'll get 8-9 sacks. That's nothing to sneeze at.
But do you overpay for a guy that's part of a three-man rotation as opposed to being the dominant guy at that position? I will say in his case, look, last year he only played 12 games. So he misses four games. Perhaps he gets near double digits in sacks if he plays the other four games. But before that, 13, 13, 11, 9.5, and 13.5. That's not terrible production.
It buys you some credibility.
That's
right?
Not terrible production considering what was playing on the opposite side of him and the inconsistencies of that position. So if, say I'm in arbitration and I'm the agent for Ryan Kerrigan and I'm sitting across from the Redskins and I'm saying I'm trying to make my case for my guy, I'm going to say, look, my guy put up these numbers with basically a bag of horse manure playing on the other side of him based on the way those players played at the time.
It's not this year's Preston Smith. It's the old Preston Smith.
You hit something else on the head. Perhaps also was the way that the player was being used. Will the player be used more toward a pass rusher, say, 90% of the time this year as opposed to maybe 70% of the time, which if you broke down snap by snap, it would be interesting to see what that breakdown truly was over the last couple of years with Greg Minuski's defense.
800-636-1067 is the number. We'll jump to your calls here in a second. But the other thing I want to bring up quickly about this is these stats are always unreliable. I mean, Pro Football Focus tries to do these kinds of things, and I tip of the cap for, you know, you're watching a million plays and trying to grade everybody. I don't know how you do it effectively, and I honestly don't think they do or you're capable of it. But there are some useful data points. But I wonder if you're walking into that room, right? You know, now Scott Boras gives you a binder, gives you a novel about a player, right? Where you can say this hard hit percentage, this contact percentage, this is what this guy's worth in terms of pitches seen per at bat, and that equals this many more millions of dollars than everyone else thinks he's worth. I wonder what the agent would say when they go, this is the percentage of time he beat his guy. This is the percentage of the time he's double teamed, wins against the first guy, but then doesn't get home because nobody else, you know, was helping him on the defensive line or that kind of thing. There's a million things that go into a sack. It's not just as simple as beat your right tackle, end up in the backfield. Quarterbacks move around, and if they can move to a spot because someone else isn't where they should be, then you don't get a sack. But did you influence the play? That's always so hard to quantify. Just anecdotally from the eye test, and I want to see if you agree with me, it didn't feel like he had that same impact. Like, think of the number of times where a quarterback is forced to move around because Kerrigan is rolling by, swipes at him like a bear looking to smack a salmon. You know what I'm talking about? Where he gets a paw on him, maybe doesn't bring him down, but you've influenced the play now. It just felt like there were less of those this year than there were in years past. Right?
I would say this year, yes. This year was not a typical Ryan Kerrigan season. But as we found out during the course of the year, the dude was clearly not 100% even when he was playing. So, look, based on the consistency of performance leading up to last year, again, I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt last year, but I'm not willing to do it at the expense of a 3- or 4-year commitment to the player, which could hamstring me down the road. It's got to be something fiscally responsible for me. Look, if you want more money, I'll go shorter term. Because that way I'm not on the hook for you as long.
Right.
But if you want term and significant money, we're not going to have a marriage there. That's not going to happen for a guy that's going to be 32 this year. Not going to happen.
Let's go to Dan in Fairfax. Dan, good morning, man. You're on the Fan. Your thoughts on Kerrigan?
I appreciate you guys. And I think we should absolutely keep Kerrigan. The juice is worth the squeeze, as you guys like to say. I want to see him get the record, and he's one of my favorite players. And he's perfectly capable of getting 10 or more sacks, I think, this year. And especially if we decide not to keep, not to pick Chase Young in the draft. We need him.
Thank you, Dan. Appreciate you. I still think Kerrigan can be productive. And the two variables are health, obviously. Now, again, he doesn't fall in this category. The thing I always try to say is oft-injured players don't get healthier in their 30s, right, in this sport. He's not an off-injured guy. He was hurt last year in myriad ways. The other part is usage. We just know that Jack Del Rio is better than Greg Minuski was, right? We just know it intuitively. Now, he had good production with bad defensive coordinators like Joe Barry before, so we'll see. That's a variable. Depends on how bullish you are on new things, new usage. Can the Redskins' offense do a little bit more, so there's more obvious passing situations. There's a million things that go into sack totals.
Absolutely.
But just anecdotally, you need more production for that guy at that cap level.
And how much, perhaps, can drafting Chase Young and being able to move him around help Ryan Kerrigan? Because if you line up on a play, 3rd and 13, you got Young coming off of one side, you got Kerrigan coming off the other, there's a good chance that the other teams could put two guys over on Chase Young, which means if you're Ryan Kerrigan, you're one-on-one, pal. That's your best chance to get home and affect the play, force a fumble, make the quarterback step up in the pocket, make him throw off schedule. I mean, if the Redskins draft Chase Young, I don't think Ryan Kerrigan's going to see many double teams during the course of the year like he has pretty much his entire career.
You wouldn't think.
Here in Washington.
Speaking
That's
of double
another
teams.
Potential influence to him,
yeah, oh yeah.
Giving you more performance.
Adding pass rushers. It's situational, but the situations may be better. I think that's a good point. A scary thing happened to Jordan Reed. He was concussed in the preseason and couldn't play, couldn't get out of concussion protocol until apparently a couple days ago. Just very strange. We'll go into Jordan Reed, his legacy, what the Redskins are going to do, where he might end up. We'll do that after the update, 5 minutes away.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.